No.
Nothing matter. What the problem? Call. Work it. Yeah. Any type. Situation. He. Work it. Yeah. I don't have no time. Call. Work it. Work it. Work it. Work it. Work it. Work it.
Welcome again. Hello and welcome again to Work It Out with Mercy Quay, the show about what people do for work, at work, and what motivates them to move. I am talking to people who have ditched their 9-to-5s to be their own bosses and take on 24/7s. And I'm also talking to folks who have skipped the status quo altogether to carve out their own particular brand of happiness. Whether you are an average Joe or a jack of all trades or even a Clark Kent, that's a tongue twister. Clark Kent, hiding in your own work. I want to hear from you. Consider this your Monday motivation and your weekly invitation to figure out what your passion is and work it out. So today's guest on the Fail Month series is Justin Elliker. This name should be familiar to everyone. Say hi, Justin.
Hey, how
you doing? live on 103.5 FM WNHH. We're also streaming at newhavenindependent.org and on the New Haven Independent's Facebook page, so we're live there as well. Justin has graciously agreed to join me here on Fail Month, and actually he just a second ago goes, Mercy, I have no idea what we're talking about. And it's going to be a good time. I think most of the people who check in and watch this show know that we have kind of just an organic conversation and it just happens pretty naturally. I am excited to get you to jump into the fail of the week, which I think everyone in New Haven is kind of familiar with, and people are on either side of it. Let me just go ahead and pass it over to you. And if you haven't been listening in, let me describe what Fail Month is. All month long, while people are talking about their New Year's resolutions and how they're going to change the year, I wanted to kick it off with a story from individuals each week about a failure that they may have dove into headfirst, and whether it turned out well. And actually, in the case of Fail Month, it didn't turn out well. Although it didn't turn out well, they definitely turned it around and made it work for them. So, Justin, I'm just going to go ahead and pass it over to you. Tell us what your fail was.
So I'm choosing a fail of the week or a fail of life?
The fail that you were here, that you were brought on the show for, your story is the fail of the week.
I see. So you're referring to I didn't win...
Yeah.
Okay. So actually it's interesting when you, I think the whole way that, you're framing this is I find intriguing and exciting.
Yeah.
Because so many people think of, failure in the short term,
mm-hmm.
and they, look at something that they were not successful at the first time
mm-hmm.
as having failed.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say that, in most cases, your initial failure often sets you up for many other successes in the future.
Yeah.
And so if you're looking at that individual incident, yeah, mm-hmm. maybe you did fail, or I'd frame it as not succeeding rather than
yeah.
failing. But in the long run, that may have helped you become a much more resilient individual, may have given you a lot of either character skills, mm-hmm. like humility to know that you don't know everything,
mm-hmm.
the reminder that if you are persistent and fail a number of times, you may succeed in the long run. But it also may have given you a lot of skills that you can use if you go at something again,
yeah,
and be more successful. And it may not be even in that individual endeavor, but it may be in some other area where you can use those skills to succeed.
Yeah.
So
wasn't it Alexander Graham Bell that said, in trying to make the light bulb, he tried it 300 some odd times, and he said, I didn't fail 300 times. I found 300 ways to not make a light bulb.
Yeah. In many cases, I think people should think about that a lot more, right? And I think the main reason that you invited me here today is because I guess it's going on 4 years now.
I think it is.
There was a very exciting election in New Haven, and it felt at one point like everyone and their brother was running for mayor. I had announced that I was running, and it was, as I recall, just a couple weeks later that John DeStefano, who had been mayor for 20 years, announced that he was no longer running for re-election. And it's funny, that evening, I remember someone that I knew quite well sending me a text saying, "You're going to be the next mayor," because John DeStefano had dropped out.
Mm.
And I actually thought that the result was going to be quite different, because with DeStefano not being in the race, there were going to be so many other people
throwing their hats in,
and it made things much less predictable from a political perspective.
Mm-hmm.
And sure enough, that happened.
That's exactly what happened.
There were maybe 10 people, 8 people.
I want to say 8 or 10 people at the start of it.
and over time, after DeStefano announced that he dropped out, a bunch more people got in, and then over time, some of them dropped out, and we arrived at the primary, and I came in second, and so more people dropped out, and in the end...
And some people decided to just keep going.
Yeah. Well, so after the primary, I don't think anyone other than Tony Harp and
was it,
they started... continue to go. Maybe Sundiata.
I was did Kerm Carolina go? Okay, no. He pulled out. I thought he was a write-in candidate.
Yeah. So the most prominent Democrats in the primary were Henry Fernandez, Kermit Carolina, Tony Harp, and me.
Yeah.
And Henry Fernandez and Kerm ended up after the primary dropping out.
They dropped. Mm-hmm.
And in the end, I don't recall the exact numbers, but it was something like 45% in the general election, 45% me, 55 Tony Harp.
It was a close day. I was a reporter during that time.
It was crazy.
It was.
It was exciting.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that in looking back on the election, a lot of people felt that, I was facing a pretty significant challenge with almost every political player in New Haven endorsing Tony and supporting Tony, and that I did better than people had expected.
Mm.
And so, yes, I didn't win. did I fail? Maybe I did. I guess objectively, yes. I didn't accomplish my goal for that election.
Mm-hmm.
But I also think that I succeeded in a lot of ways, and running a campaign that I was proud of, that I participated in public financing, which is something that I feel ethically is very important.
Mm-hmm.
I think that I engaged so many people that had not been interested in politics before, met so many people in New Haven, talked about issues that were important to people. And so in the end, looking back on the election, I succeeded in many ways and failed in one.
So, I mean, during that time, what was like, were you new to politics? You're kind of introducing me to the story. I mean, mm-hmm. I've known you for, I want to say a little bit over a year now, but I think you're sort of introducing me to the story of who you were prior to the election, because that's the first time I heard the last name Elliker.
Mm-hmm. So I was kind of new to politics. I was on the Board of Aldermen. It was referred to as a Board of Aldermen back then, for about 3 years. And felt, I had at that time been in New Haven only, I guess, 6 years or something like that.
Where'd you come from?
I was in the State Department. So I was in Hong Kong before that, and then Taiwan before that, and Washington, D.C. before that. So I've been traveling around for a while, wanted to put down roots in a city.
Yeah.
Came to New Haven and loved the city. And, after 2 years of being here, I decided to run for alderman. I wanted to get involved, and had been involved at the community level with the Friends of East Rock Park.
Nice.
And just saw in traveling around the city and getting to know people that there were a lot of things that people were frustrated with. Government response, the government's ability and interest to be engaged with people feeling like they didn't have the kind of influence, or people at the levels of power weren't always listening to what they cared about. And so I wanted to throw my hat in and get involved. And So I was, you know, I'd been in politics for 3 years, being on the board of Alders,
right.
But in many ways, I was, and I think you saw this in the number of people that did not endorse me that were the political establishment in New Haven. In many ways, I was not the typical politician, and that I often raised my voice when I disagreed about things that were, that I thought many of my colleagues were voting on, and always spoke my mind. And,
those are very New Haven traits.
I think they're national traits, right? I mean, look at what's going on in Congress.
That's true. Yeah.
You mean raising your voice?
Yeah.
So, oh, fair enough. That's New Haven traits. Although I agree that there's a lot of activism in New Haven, and a lot of it. But as far as the political establishment goes, I would say that a lot of people that are politically involved in New Haven do work as a group in ways that don't always promote dissension. Obviously, when those ideals are looked at from a maybe state level, New Haven is quite independent in the way that our city advocates for certain things that are important to us. And I really admire that. But as far as speaking out against what the New Haven political establishment agrees with and supports, that's not welcome.
Yeah. So in the on the train of sort of talking about the New Haven political establishment, what was the hardest thing about kind of breaking in to the space for you?
I think it's still hard. I haven't broken in. You know, you talk with people. I have coffee with a lot of people around town, just talking about the city and the direction we're going, and my openness and interest in getting involved politically in some fashion down the road. And I still, I think one of the significant questions in my mind is, would I get the support of a lot of the traditional political players in New Haven?
Yeah.
And I'm not clear that I necessarily would.
No, and more clear than you were 4 years ago?
I think that, so I haven't changed my approach to politics. I think maybe I've grown up a little bit from 4 years ago about how complex politics is. And I'm not as idealistic about how things need to get done. But there are certain values that I think are very important, or are important to me, like supporting policies that you you agree with, and not always compromising on those, and supporting things like you know, the public financing, which as an example, there were, and I'm not going to get into specifics at all, but a number, when I was running for mayor, a number of people that insinuated that if we hired them as campaign consultants, they would endorse me and bring along a certain constituency that they were known to have be able to
and
sway.
Right, yeah.
And we said no. We said that I felt was unethical, because you know, legally we can hire people as consultants,
right?
And so they're legally, we could have done that, but the understanding was, and their like clear proposal was, even if they didn't say it explicitly, you pay me and I'll endorse you. And I'm still not willing to do that.
Right.
I'm not willing to negotiate. I'll give you a job if you support me and bring along your group of supporters. So there's those things that I think make it a little bit more challenging to succeed, because that kind of negotiations in politics exists in Connecticut, exists in New Haven, certainly.
Certainly, it seems as though it would be difficult to succeed with that sort of clean, in the spirit or with the value of clean politics, if you're up against an establishment that is the understanding. So, right, New Haven native here speaking, and sort of understanding that, you know, DeStefano had been mayor for 20 years, mayor most of my life, right? Tony coming in 13, I think any challenger, I mean, I'm interested in knowing what you think. Any challenger to that establishment, would you think that they would have consistent difficulty? Or do you think it was just that one year when you're turning over a new leaf from a 20-year tenure of a mayoral seat?
Right. So that's the question. I mean, I don't know as it is as much connected with DeStefano being around for 20 years as it was the specifics of once DeStefano stepped out, who was running for mayor.
Mm-hmm.
Because there were so many people running, and because Mayor Harp had had a significant amount of support around the city from many people who had strong relationships with her. She had done a lot of positive work at the Capitols to support many people in New Haven. And many people were excited about the idea of her being mayor, which I think is admirable.
The first black female mayor.
People were also excited about the idea of New Haven having the first black female mayor. And so there were those elements as well, which have nothing to do with this idea that you need to horse trade to get elected, right? And I think those were very powerful elements in that election as well. There's a secondary portion of I think with certain political players it helps a lot, and it may not be even the people that are currently in office, but other people that are influential around the city that are involved in politics, but maybe that aren't elected officials. Getting support from certain people, you need to do a little bit of that sort of horse trading.
Yeah.
And so you add those components up, in addition to how hard you work and how important your message is. And those things all count for votes for a certain candidate. And so that the math is different, now, and it may be different, in another 2 years. And even with all those things, I ended up getting 45% of the vote.
Yeah, it's definitely commendable. And I think especially with names like Kermit Carolina or Henry Fernandez, you know, people who, New Haveners are, familiar with, Kerm being native. Mm-hmm. What do you think sort of set you up to be successful over them?
I'm sure it's
tough to say.
Yeah, there were a lot of things. And what was, I think, exciting is after the primary, when Kerm and Henry dropped out, Kerm ended up endorsing me. I'm still thankful for that, because I think he took a courageous step to do that. It's politics is unpredictable.
Yeah.
A lot of it's around the message that you're sending about what you care about and what you think you can do for the city. A lot of it's about how hard you can work. A lot of it's about your past track record, how visible you've been.
Mm-hmm.
For a variety of those reasons, I think I was, the person that landed in second place. In the future, again, politics is unpredictable. Who knows what may happen as far as, other people that may run for different positions, what's going on at the national level, which impacts people's opinions and oftentimes how they vote at the local level.
Yeah, so. Absolutely. So what have the last 4 years been like for you?
They've been awesome.
Tell me more.
On a personal level, when you run for mayor, you spend so much time away from your family, who at the time was my closest family, was my wife Natalie, and it was because we didn't have children then. It was a little bit easier to spend time with her, because I'd get home late and we'd take a walk with the dog at like 11 p.m.
Yeah.
And so there was more time for us to spend with each other. But after the election, all of a sudden, I had a much more forgiving schedule, and we had a little girl, Molly, who's now 3, and spending time. Being able to spend time with them is something I feel very fortunate to have that opportunity. And on the professional level, I've spent 4 years at the New Haven Land Trust, which was struggling when I took the helm for a variety of, of reasons. It was mismanaged. It had some financial issues, and thinking back on when I started, I was part time, and we had only one other part time staff. To today, when we have a budget that's almost four times what it was, we have let's see, one, two, three, four. We're looking at almost five full time staff.
Oh, wow.
We've increased the level of programming and engagement with a variety of different groups of people that, you know, none of that would have happened if I had won for mayor.
Yeah,
there's
that's
a lot
true.
Of other opportunities that would have happened if had I won. But it's been so exciting to take an organization that was really struggling and make it into what I'd like to say is an organization that is doing very exciting, interesting, innovative things in New Haven. And
like
and
what
I
are
believe
those
are making a big difference in people's lives. The things that the Land Trust has done for many years, it's been in existence for 35 years, is own six nature preserve and support about 50 community gardens. They kind of come and go over the years, depending on community involvement and engagement. And what we have done in the past 4 years, our board and staff, has been to not just view ourselves as what properties we own and support, but view ourselves as view those properties as a way to change people's relationship with their communities, with their environment. So we've done that both by really improving the experience that people have when they visit those properties. You know, our gardens are looking really good because of a lot of time and effort we've spent to clean up the properties and make them really beautiful places to be in, our preserves as well. But on top of that, and what I'm much more proud of is we've started some programs that deepen people's relationship with the environment and in many ways meet New Haveners where they are at. And what I mean by that is that, you know, the Land Trust interest is to get people more engaged in their community, learn more about healthy eating, learn more about how we build a more sustainable community. And if you knock on doors around the city and talk to people about what they care about, people don't often frame things in that way. You'll hear things like, we need productive things for our kids to do, whether that's, you know, a 5-year-old or a teenager.
Right.
We need more access to job training so that our kids have more of an ability to get a job in the future. I need some help over the summer when my kids aren't in school to make sure that they have good supervision or doing something that's enriching. And so we've taken our goals as an organization and combined those with what oftentimes you hear in New Haven as people's goals. And there's two programs that we've started in the last couple of years. One is Growing Entrepreneurs, where we currently have five and we're about to add six new kids to the program. They're high school kids. And they grow food to sell it to local restaurants, but they also come up with their own food-related business ideas.
Oh,
so
wow.
A couple of the ideas is one of the young women in our program has, with some of the produce that we grow, made sofrito. And they've also been making kale pesto to sell at the farmer's market.
Oh, wow.
They made $100 at the winter's farmer's market on Saturday this past week. And
down on Edgewood Park?
No, it's so the winter's market, I think, is at Metropolitan.
It's at Metro, okay.
Yeah, and so the idea is that the high school kids that are participating in our program are learning a lot about growing food, they're learning a lot about sustainability, but they're also, a strong part of the program is customer service, how to be professional, how to interview for a job, how to use Microsoft Excel to kind of schedule out their crop and how to maximize their profits. They actually keep the profits that they make if they can make a profit, which is challenging. And so they're learning all these different skills that both will make them more concerned about caring about the environment in the future, but also make them much more productive human beings and more capable of securing a job in the future, et cetera. And the second program is we have joined with Schooner, which was a nonprofit.
Yeah, I used to work at Schooner.
Awesome.
When I was a teenager.
And so you know it well. So we've basically restarted the summer camp. And last week we had summer camp for 8 weeks and we had a couple hundred kids participate in it. Half of the campers were on full or partial scholarship. And so there's like a ton of kids that are sailing and exploring the coast, learning about all these great things over the summer. So
that's awesome.
Yeah, it feels really good to have accomplished a lot with our staff and board.
There's a little bit of a pun here about how you are now rooted in New Haven culture. There's a pun there that I think I won't over-deliver. Would you consider...
I think you just did.
I really did. No, but you are as... because I now can't think of a different verb. You are as rooted in New Haven culture or community as anyone can be. Do you still feel as though you are a transplant, or how are you starting to think of yourself differently now?
I'm not sure I would agree with your kind statement that I'm as rooted as anyone can be, because New Haven, and one thing, I learned a lot of things running for mayor, but one thing that it's funny, I've talked to John DeStefano a couple times in passing about this, that I gained more and more respect for DeStefano as I went through the process of running for mayor, because New Haven is a complicated city, both because of the complex politics, but also because of this question of how do you address so many of the challenges that we face in the city. With the right policies and gaining support around the city is very complicated. And I don't think that's unique to New Haven, but I do think that we, as a city, we're very representative of the problems as a nation. I can't remember the details, but I remember there was some a study that came out that New Haven was the most representative city of the nation.
Yeah, actually, we are the most normal city or most representative city of the nation. This was, I want to say, early last year. I forget who put it out, but I was on Colin McEnroe's show talking about it on The Nose. We had a New Haven Nose down here in their Audubon studio when it happened. It's like, I'm very proud to be
it's cool, right?
From New Haven.
It's cool. But I guess I was, to answer your question of, I feel like I'm, you know, personally very, very rooted in the city. And, you know, if there was any doubt about that before, you know, I have a family here, we own a home here, we've done, my wife and I have done a lot of work in the community and love the city.
Yeah.
But at the same time, there's like, there's so much I don't know about the city. And
so much and that you won't even be
almost any listener today. There's a lot that you probably need to learn about the city too. I mean, this we have a lifetime in this city of things
seriously.
To learn, and so I'm not sure as I am so overconfident to think that I know so much about the city. but just I would say that over time. Having different experiences in the city makes one more rooted here. Running an organization in the city, which I had not done before, the New Haven Land Trust opens a different window into what I understand about the complexities of how you resolve issues between gardeners that may be arguing and how you are able to make budget and fundraise enough and manage staff and things like that. Being a father in the city.
And you haven't even gone through the school system.
Oh, well, so we're starting to do this. And there's all these complexities that I heard from so many people about, but now I'm living them.
Yeah.
And, you know, even silly things like my wife and I are having a conversation about the magnet school lottery is way after, and we don't know if we would get a magnet school that we wanted for preschool for our daughter. The timeline of that happens way after we would have to commit to sending her to a preschool that we'd have to pay for.
Yeah.
And so how do we figure out, we want our daughter to go to a good preschool. How do we figure out how to do that math? Do we take the risk of waiting before committing and putting a deposit down at a local preschool that she'll get into a good magnet school? And I heard about these things before, but now I'm living them, and yeah. it becomes much more real. So as time goes on, we I think living experiences is, you know, obviously in many ways, it has a more personal and significant impact mm-hmm. on a person than does hearing many stories yeah. about the challenges that people are facing.
So at the beginning of your answer, you said for anyone who you sort of addressed folks who had doubts about, you know, your commitment to the city. Was that something that you had to overcome entering the political space in New Haven?
Do you mean I was doubting my commitment to the city, or
folks doubting your commitment to the city?
Yeah, so that came up. I remember. I mean, it came up in conversation a lot, right? I was mm-hmm. it was pretty new when I ran for mayor the first time, and in some ways
you were in New Haven for about 5 years yeah, by that time.
Yeah, about 5-6 years, something like. I'm not very good with that. I have a short
time.
Short-term memory. Yeah. but I can imagine someone that grew up in New Haven being like, man, this guy has some gall thinking he can run our city when he's only been here for 5 or 6 years. And there were questions that came up sometimes one-on-one. And I remember there was a question in one of the livelier debates. I think it was hosted by the NAACP, where people said, oh, you're from New Canaan, Connecticut, which is true. I grew up in New Canaan, Connecticut, which is a wealthy suburb of New York. Mm-hmm. And you've been in New Haven for 5 years or whatever. You know, how do you think that you, where do you get off? I don't think they framed it as.
I was going to say, whoa.
They didn't frame it as where do you get off.
You get
they framed
off?
It a little bit more diplomatically, but there was a little bit of that tone. And I, you know, I get it. And my response to that then is, you know, I can't control where I grew up. I'm not living in New Canaan now for a reason, and I will not
move
back to New Canaan. There's a lot of reasons I'm not living in New Canaan. I think it doesn't have the lifestyle that I choose to expose myself to, and you know, I love New Canaan in many ways. I have a lot of good friends, and everything from the diversity to the real life experience that you are more likely to be exposed to in New Haven, to the walkability of the neighborhoods, mm-hmm. to the exciting activism that's going on
to
in the city,
food.
To the food, to the arts, to, you know, the list goes on.
Mm-hmm.
I will always choose New Haven over New Canaan, right? you know, over time, I think that our experiences in New Haven have made us more excited and committed to the city.
Yeah. Was there any, I mean, I guess the answer to this question is sort of built into the fact that you got 45% of the vote, but there's sort of this narrative of, you know, fresh eyes can come into New Haven and really give us what we need. Is that sort of the leg you were standing on for most of the campaign?
There were a couple of things that we, our team was focused on,
mm-hmm.
And felt that what were important ways to, or important, like the foundation of our campaign, mm-hmm. and also highlighted how what I was interested in doing for the city mm-hmm. was different than some of the other people running. And,
yeah.
You know, and I think that one of those themes is a new approach, new ideas, new policies. We can't do the same old thing that we've been doing for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And another was about integrity and wanting a government that opts into public financing, that doesn't give people, contractors, contracts because they donated to my campaign,
mm-hmm,
things
mm-hmm.
like that. And so, and that resonated with a lot of people. And I suspect over time that will resonate more and more with people, both because our city is growing in mm-hmm. population, but probably most importantly because you see this at the national level, at the state level, and at the local level, that people are tired of this political system that is more responsive to wealthy people that donate to campaigns,
yeah.
that wants new people, wants a new generation. There's a lively conversation going on at the Democratic National Committee mm-hmm. about who our leaders should be, empowering new people to get involved in politics. Mm-hmm. And you see that at the local level. I mean, you see that with Daryl Brackeen and Pat Dillon is that narrative is in that campaign. You see that at the state level, and so I think that we will continue to see that theme of what kind of city are we? Are we a city that is kind of steaming ahead with the same old group of people that are running the city, or are we ready for new leadership in the city? At some point, that new leadership will come, and I think people are ready, just as a whole, to start supporting politicians that are younger, the new generation of political thinkers.
Yeah. If you are just tuning in, you are listening to Work It Out with Mercy Quay on WNHH Radio, broadcasting at 103.5 FM and live streamed at www.newhavenindependent.org. Today's guest is Justin Elliger, whose name you'll remember from the 2013 mayoral cycle. So you're not in politics anymore right now. What you're doing, you sort of have a private lifestyle. You are heading up the New Haven Land Trust. Do you ever get that political itch anymore?
Yeah, absolutely. I think about it often.
Yeah.
I think about it often. And I think about running for mayor again.
Listen, if we're breaking news, I'd love for you to break news on this show.
No, I'm not going to break it. I'm not going to break it today. You know, there's a lot of calculations that go into that.
Yeah.
And I don't mean that in the kind of sinister term of, you know, I have to, but if I did run for mayor again, I think the first time around it was a little bit of a long shot campaign. I wouldn't want it to be a long shot campaign.
Yeah.
So I think that it's much more likely that it would not be a long shot campaign next time around, because it would be easier to raise money and get support.
For sure.
And, people know what I stand for, and that hasn't changed.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's the personal questions of, is this the right decision for me and my family?
Yeah.
It's on my mind. It's often on my mind.
Outside of a potential mayoral run again, did you ever think about going back to the Board of Alders?
I don't think so.
No,
I don't think so. I really liked the work I did on and the experience of being on the Board of Alders.
Mm-hmm.
It gave me this, as with all the alders, a window into the city that really teaches you how government operates, what kind of issues exist out there for people, because you have an opportunity to do everything from go door to door and ask people what they care about, which it would be kind of weird as a random citizen to do that, right? People be like, what are you doing? Get out of here, right?
Hi, my name is Mercy. I was just wondering.
What do you care about, right? So it's like a privilege in many ways that you're able to do that.
Mm-hmm.
But people also come to you without soliciting them to tell you what they care about.
Mm-hmm.
So you can interact with so many different people.
Mm-hmm.
And then also just learning about the inner workings of the city and how complex it is to get things done by being on different commissions and committees. That was fascinating. But I also, I'm ambitious, and I want to keep moving personally, professionally forward. And I don't see being alder again as fitting into
as
the plan.
Into that trajectory. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't want to take away from the work that the alders are doing. I think they're doing incredible work, and oftentimes are on the receiving end of a lot of negative criticism, which sometimes is merited, but oftentimes people don't understand the challenges.
The complexity.
The issues that they're facing.
So how are you scratching that political itch?
Always talking with people.
Mm. Learning more about the problems that people face in the city.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd like to get more. When I ran the first time around, before that, I was able to go to all these community meetings around the city almost every night. And I really enjoyed doing that.
Yeah.
It's a little bit more difficult to do now.
Why is that?
Because I have a daughter and I want to be fair to my wife. and so I think that's one of the main challenges. Mm-hmm. But the second is that running the land trust, it just takes a lot of time. We have a decent number of night meetings as well.
Mm-hmm.
But that's something that I would like to do. And I think that there's politics and there's people that, and there's certain people that are very good at this of always meeting the other politicians and talking with them and strategizing and thinking, oh, if, this person endorses this person, then this person is likely to.
Oh, the political webbing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's mm-hmm. I'm the first to admit I'm not very good at that stuff. Mm-hmm. But the part of, I don't even know if it's politics, maybe this is not the right word to describe it. The part that I like is the interacting with people and learning about the issues and learning how to fix people's
sure.
problems
yeah.
and talking about how to do that. That gets me excited.
Yeah.
And the way to do that is to just, is to talk not with the politicians, but talk with
the people,
political leaders out there.
Sure.
But the other leaders in the city and just people, right? That mm-hmm. aren't leaders. And oftentimes they're the people that are least engaged in politics are the most likely to give you the real thing.
Right? A mouthful of the real thing.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
For sure. And so you were just talking about how you're really interested in this sort of new class of politician raising up. What do you think is going to get us there? Whether as a city, which I think you have some insight on, or state, nation, what do you think is going to get us to the place of this new class of politician raising up? Because I'm really excited for the millennials to be in power. Mm-hmm. I cannot wait for that to happen. Mm-hmm. And I can't wait for the millennial generation to age into the presidency,
right.
because that should be really, well, an equitable, presidency, if anything else, if nothing else.
We hope.
Yeah.
We hope, right?
Unless it's the millennials that were, integral in planning Charlottesville. But, mm-hmm.
So I think, the question is a complicated one. Mm-hmm. I think there's sort of the crisis will get us there. At the same time,
yeah, we are currently in crisis.
Yeah, at the same time that the hope will get us there,
mm-hmm.
and I think you need both both of those things, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like Hillary Clinton lost the presidency and Donald Trump won, and what that did is fire up. An amazing number of women to run for office, to be more active in their
mm-hmm.
local politics.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a crisis that's created a situation that will support a more, with that particular example, women who have not as frequently been interested in running for office
yeah.
or felt empowered to or fired up to
mm-hmm.
To run for office. And so that's sort of the crisis side of things. And I suspect that you will see the same narrative, even with Bernie Sanders not winning. I think
yeah.
that people that this feeling of failure really fires people up to, and that will promote a new generation getting more involved in politics.
Mm.
But at the same time, there's this this hope element where people see. Good ideas, inspiring local leaders, and have in mind this vision of what could be
mm-hmm.
that will promote those individuals moving up. But we're going to see resistance all along the way.
Mm-hmm. I really like that idea of failure fueling passion.
Yeah,
I really like that idea a lot.
And it's. Donald Trump is the best example of it today in people's mind, right?
Sure.
I mean, I would consider that a great failure in many ways nationally, of our electoral system,
mm-hmm.
of news and messaging,
mm-hmm.
But also of people's involvement politically, whether it's knocking on doors or donating to
yeah.
campaigns or
mm-hmm.
whatever. And that has created this backlash that I think is significant. I think we'll see that in the 2018 elections. I think that we're seeing that locally. I mean,
mm-hmm.
you have Valerie Horsley is a leader in Action Together.
Yep.
And she's running for office, I think that we'll see that more and more. But at the same time, there will be pushback from the establishment. And while the New Haven delegation, our state legislators, are, in my opinion, very, very often on the same page with what I believe politically, and I think they're making the right decisions, most of our delegation has been around for a very long time. And even with the example that we have today of Daryl Brackeen, potentially, he hasn't announced, but potentially running against Pat Dillon, you'll see if Pat Dillon decides to stay in her seat, I think you will see most, if not all, of the delegation lining up behind Pat to protect her. I think Pat's done a lot of great things, and I'm not going to, like, you know, put my stake in the ground right now with that campaign, but I think that's an example on the local level of this pushback with younger people really wanting to make a difference and be involved, and the establishment or the folks that have been around for a long time not ready
to see that change.
Yeah, and I think at some point we just got to push that.
Yeah, I mean,
it's time.
Right. I don't think that power relents easily. Mm-hmm. Power will only relent when, you know, at the hand of a force. And I'm really hopeful for millennials to kind of be that force to make it happen. I think Daryl Brackeen is a really good example of a force that can make that happen, and an example of, you know, just this demographic in New Haven that is just ready to take the microphone and run with it.
Absolutely.
Yeah. What advice would you have for, you know, I don't even want to say a generation, but, you know, this new fleet of potential politicians, who might be afraid to go up against, you know, a Goliath?
Just do it.
Okay.
Right? I mean,
just do it.
But it's, seriously, I mean, it sounds like silly advice, right? But there's so much. I have a good number of people have reached out to me to say, hey, I'm thinking of running for office, or I think I'm thinking of getting more involved in politics, but I don't know how to do it. And it's not rocket science. And once you throw yourself into the fire, you learn how to do it.
Yeah.
And there's plenty of people that don't know how to do it that succeed.
Yeah. I think even though it's not rocket science, it feels like an accessibility sport.
Mm-hmm.
It feels like skiing, you know?
Exactly.
Black people don't ski, not because, you know, they can. It's because they can't afford to.
Yeah. Well, but I mean, it depends on what you're going for, right?
Sure.
Like at the local level, you don't need money.
Mm-hmm.
To run for the Board of Alders, you don't need money. You don't need any money to win.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that the one, you know, benefit to us having 30 Alders is that anyone can, if they work hard, win.
Yeah.
At the state level, we have public financing, and so it's not as inaccessible.
Mm-hmm.
At the national level, it's obviously a totally different story.
Yeah.
The financial thing, and I think oftentimes people that have not been involved feel like they need permission from some other person that's been involved to run, or need some special area of expertise or knowledge about policy. And in reality, the important thing is that what I believe people care about that vote most often is about, can I trust this person to make the right decision for me? And if you are that type of person, and if you don't always know what the right decision is, if you're the type of person that can try your best to figure out what the right decision is and really cares about making the right decision, you can be successful.
Yeah. I have a comment coming in from Facebook from Tiffany Goff. She says, you don't need money, but you still need accessibility. I'm assuming that this is sort of it's not what you know, but it's a who you know sort of situation.
Mm-hmm. I see.
What do you think about that?
It depends on the level.
Mm.
I think it depends on the level still. Board of Alders, I mean, you think you have about 5,000 constituents.
Mm-hmm.
That's not, you can knock on every door at least once in a campaign.
Yeah.
And so I guess you need shoes. But other than that,
and time,
and the accessibility question, it makes it more challenging when you don't have a handful of what people perceive as leaders,
yeah,
endorsing you. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's totally legitimate. And,
yeah.
and it certainly made it more challenging for me to run for mayor. And
for sure.
Because there were very few politicians that endorsed me. And people looked to them.
Yeah.
Which in many cases is a good thing to do, in some cases not. So I think that depending on the level, mm-hmm. if you want to run for Board of Alders, Board of Ed even, which is half the city, if you have an inspiring message and you have your time is another thing that you need and not everyone has, and you're willing to work hard, you can get your message out and win.
Yeah. So this is sort of like the final few minutes here. You said just do it. Right. Mm-hmm. For anyone who kind of is thinking about running for a political seat, just do it. Can they reach out to you?
Yeah. 203-500-2969 is my cell.
Wow.
It's funny. I actually I said that on TV during a debate and everyone was like, wow, you put out his number. But I got very few text messages or calls.
No one reached out.
I'll have coffee with anyone. I'm always game to have coffee. I'm not sure how much people can learn from me, but I'm always happy to share my opinions on things.
And, well, I think from from the perspective of a long shot campaign that gave the current mayor a run for her money, I think a lot of people can learn something from you.
From my failure.
Learn something from your failure. Right. And then here's just the last question that I like to ask all of my guests when they come on. What gets you worked up?
It's funny. I've been there are certain things, and you should ask my wife rather than me that question.
I should ask your wife gets you
actually
worked
maybe
up?
You shouldn't, but okay. She does know the answer to that.
She'll call in right now and say dishes.
She better not. There's a little bit of that. What I've been trying to distill, sometimes I get really angry about certain things, and I think that the thing that gets me worked up the most is a feeling of injustice.
Mm.
And it manifests itself in the most simple of ways of, for some reason I need to update my computer, which costs me money because I can't get the Microsoft version that I'm using.
Yeah.
And so that a company is forcing me to do something
to upgrade.
And I have no control. Yeah. And then it manifests itself when I read the New York Times in the morning.
Any
given
day.
And I'm looking at some ridiculous policy that's come out that makes me so angry. And it's something that I actually have to kind of intellectually calm myself down and say, try to control what you can control and focus on what you can control.
Yeah.
But that's the thing that I think gets me most worked up in a negative way. But I hope in a positive way as well, because I think that striving to resolve those problems, mm-hmm. That's sort of that hope crisis tension, right?
Where yeah.
I also believe that many of these problems can be solved. And so getting fired up about them and transferring that negative energy to hope.
To some positive motivation.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Is what I try to do.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for joining me on Work It Out.
Thanks for the invite.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for just agreeing to it without knowing exactly what we were going to be doing. So that's all for today. And huge thanks again to Justin Elliker for joining me on Fail Month. And thanks for you listening in and watching in as you do every week on Monday at noon. You've been watching and listening to Work It Out with Mercy Quay, the show about what people do for work, at work, and what motivates them to move. And until next time, remember, well, it started saying to work at the exact time. Find out what your passion is and figure out how to work it out.